Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, folks. I'd like to make a quick announcement here at the start about the episode 600 YouTube live stream that I'm planning. I've picked a date and a time. It's going to happen on Friday the 7th of June at 3 p.m. Paris time. That's Central European time. Okay, Friday the 7th of June at 3 p.m. Paris time. That's when the YouTube live stream for episode 600 is going to happen. Nearer the time, I will create a link for the live stream and I'll share it with you so that you can access the page on YouTube for it. I'll be recording episode 600 of Luke's English Podcast and I'll be live streaming on YouTube at the same time. Please join me. The theme of the episode is just ask me anything. That's it. I've been really imaginative and I've just come up with just ask me anything. Okay, so you'll need to be signed into a YouTube account to be able to comment and ask questions during the live stream. I'll probably just ramble, answer your questions, and enjoy myself. You'll need to work out when 3 p.m. Paris time is where you live. If you can't attend the live stream, then the video will be available on YouTube afterwards and in the Luke's English Podcast app too, I expect. And of course, the audio from the episode will be uploaded as episode 600 in the usual way. Okay, so Friday the 7th of June at 3 p.m. Paris time, that's when the episode 600 YouTube live stream is going to happen. Please join me. That will be good. Right, so this episode is sponsored by Spoken. Let me tell you about Spoken, right, because they're supporting this podcast. They're helping to make this podcast happen. So let me just tell you about them. They could be very useful for you. Spoken is like having an English teacher in your pocket. Basically, with Spoken, you can learn English on your phone using messaging apps that you probably already have. Messaging apps like WeChat, Line, WhatsApp, Viber, Facebook Messenger, and more. The way it works is that you chat with an English instructor from Spoken, and they send you different tasks which are adapted to your needs. Okay, so it's all adapted to you, your level of English and specific needs that you have. The tasks involve some reading, some writing, some listening and some speaking using the microphone on your phone. And also, they just give you a chance to practice grammar, vocabulary and functional English for various purposes, including professional situations. It kind of depends on what you need English for. And the offer from Spoken to you, my listeners, is this. So they're offering you a free 1 hour one-to-one lesson, which includes a free assessment of your English skills. No strings attached. That's just free. You can just take it or leave it. It's up to you. Then if you choose to buy a learning plan, they'll give you 20% off the first month. Any of the learning plans they offer, they'll give you 20% off the first month. And if you like, you can just take the 1 hour lesson free. And then it's up to you if you choose to go with a learning plan. It's totally up to you. So this is a great offer. And the guys at Spoken are working hard to help you learn English in ways that are convenient for your busy lifestyle. To get that offer and for more details, go to getspoken.com/LEP or click a Spoken logo on my website. Okay, and if you go through that link, that will take you to their page, which at the moment their landing page is about this free story series that they're doing, which is called The Wrong Man. You've heard me talk about it on the podcast before. So if you go to getspoken.com/LEP, it'll take you to The Wrong Man page where you can like find out about their interesting detective mystery series called The Wrong Man. You can check that out too. But to get all the details of their English lessons and their English learning plans, just click home in the menu that you will find on their page. Okay, getspoken.com/LEP or click a Spoken logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. How are you today? I hope you're doing fine. I'm doing all right. Thank you very much for asking, because obviously you did, sort of in your head. Oh, how are you, Luke? I'm fine. It was my birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Luke. Thank you so much. It's so nice of you to say that. I hope you had a fantastic day with lots of gifts and presents and things. I did, actually. I had a really nice time. It was just me and my wife and our daughter. Our daughter, she's 16 months old, so she doesn't really know what's going on. She had no idea, really, it was my birthday. I said to her, hey, it's my birthday today. And she was just, you know, normal. Just like, well, give me milk, you know, just the normal baby. She's not really a baby. She's a toddler now, technically. A toddler is like, you know, a small child that's just starting to walk, or it's not completely confident on their feet. They're kind of toddling around. A toddler. So she's a toddler now. So I was like, hey, it's my birthday. And she was like, I changed my nappy, you know. She wasn't actually saying that. She can't really speak yet. She's got limited vocab. It's mainly stuff like, what does she say? She says, a lot of just making up her own words. Like, she's kind of a jazz scat singer. You know, you should put her in a jazz band in the corner of the room. That's the kind of language she's developing at the moment. Do you know what I mean? You know the way children, before they start to speak, they kind of make up their own language. It's not exactly like that. You get the idea. I'm just joking. She says no. She says no, 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 no. So she's learnt that. I think that's the French side. That's the French side of her coming through there. Because it's another joke. Because the French are known for sort of saying no. Mais non, 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 franchement, non, quoi. So obviously that's the French side coming out. But she says it in English. No, she's like, no, 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 while waving her finger, which I think she's learnt probably from us. Because, you know, when children are toddlers, they toddle around and they want to touch everything. And so they're constantly being told, no, 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 don't touch that. No, 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 don't put your fingers in that electrical socket. No, 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 don't try to grab that knife. You know, no, 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 don't put your hands in the oven. You know, don't climb inside the washing machine. No, no, no. So she says, no, 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 quite a lot. For example, if I'm feeding her dinner and I've got one foot on her high chair, so she's sitting in her high chair. My foot is resting on the bottom of the high chair, she gets annoyed and she's like, no, no, no. She's pushing my foot off because I can't put my foot on her chair while I'm feeding her dinner. Of course I can't. Anyway, so it was my birthday yesterday and it was very nice. My wife made a lovely dinner. My daughter gave me, my wife gave a birthday card to my daughter to give to me. She gave her the card and she said, give that to daddy, go on. And so I was holding my hands out going, give me the card, darling. And she was like, no, no, no. And she decided to keep the card for herself. So, okay, fine. You don't understand the concept of a birthday, do you? I mean, you're only 16 months old. So, you know, we don't blame you for it. Anyway, I had a lovely time. Thank you so much for the lovely birthday messages that you sent to me. Even if you didn't send me a message, thank you anyway for not sending me a message. Or thank you for now realizing, oh, I didn't know. Oh, it's okay. Thank you anyway. Just thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to give a special shout out to my students in my class today at the British Council where I teach. I'd like to give a special shout out to my group of students who surprised me today with presents, delicious cake and champagne at 10:30 this morning. So I was teaching, blah, blah, blah. And then they came in, some of them came in, surprise, and they all sang me happy birthday and presented me with cake and two bottles of champagne and champagne glasses. This is France. This is the way things are done in France. Pop champagne, 10:30 in the morning. Everyone's got champagne going on. Well, some people are drinking orange juice, understandably. But a lot of us, you know, half the class were drinking champagne. I had a couple of glasses of champagne. So we all drank champagne during the class in the morning. This is all happening before 11 a.m. It seems that champagne is the only alcohol that you can drink in the morning and it's acceptable, right? I mean, I don't know how it is in your countries, but I think it's a general rule that champagne, yeah, you can drink that before lunch. You can drink that in the morning. That's fine. You can't really drink other drinks before lunch, although I'm sure in some places, some of you out there are drinking vodka and beer at breakfast time and stuff. I don't know how things work in every country, but certainly in the UK and probably in France too, it's not really okay to drink whiskey, wine, beer or vodka in the morning. It's not really acceptable. And if you do that, you're kind of an alcoholic. But champagne, yeah, go for it. You can drink champagne at breakfast if you like. That's fine. So that was fun. And it was actually pretty interesting for me to teach English after having drunk champagne. It was great, actually. I'm just typing. It was great. It was actually really good fun. And anyway, I could go on about this forever, but I won't. I need to get this introduction done and get into the episode, right? Yes, Luke, I know it's your birthday. Fine, but please, no more rambling. Get to the point. Okay. So anyway, I'm now another year older, which I am fine with. As I said in a recent episode, I'm absolutely fine with being 42 years old. Any fans of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, that series of books and the movie, which was written by Douglas Adams, a classic series of books, science fiction comedy books. Any fans of those books will know that the number 42 is very significant. It is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. In that book, basically, there's a passage in the book about a supercomputer that's created by the human race. They spend years and years and years. I think it's the humans. I can't remember who creates the computer, but they spend years creating this supercomputer, and because they need to know the answer to life, the universe, and everything. And the supercomputer processes this for centuries and centuries, and people are waiting. You know, generations are born and die, and you know, eventually the computer comes up with the answer to life, the universe, and everything. And the answer is 42. And the computer's like, the answer's 42. And everyone's like, we found it, the answer to life, the universe, and everything. It's 42. But the problem is, no one can remember what the question is. So anyway, there you go, 42. It's the answer to life, the universe, and everything. I just wish I knew what the question was. But anyway, I'm a year older, which is great. And that brings me to this episode, which is a conversation with one of the pod pals, Paul Taylor. And the conversation is all about growing up, getting older, and becoming a father. So as you will know, if you heard the previous episode, Paul is about to become a dad for the first time. His wife is pregnant. That's normally how this works. His wife is pregnant and the due date is at the end of June. Congratulations to the two of them on behalf of all of the Lepsters. Congratulations, guys. That's a huge audience of people all applauding. Congratulations. It's a girl, by the way. Hopefully she'll grow up to be friends with my daughter and friends with all the other kids from our circle of friends. We don't know what the name will be yet. We're all hoping that the rest of the pregnancy goes well and the birth too. We're looking forward to meeting the new addition to the family. Having a child can be a bit of a turning point in your life. I don't know if all of you listening to this have children. Maybe you have kids yourselves, maybe you don't, but having a child can be a bit of a turning point in your life. So in this conversation, Paul and I get a bit deep and meaningful and talk about where Paul is in his life at this point, including our thoughts about becoming a father, getting older, and growing up, and all that stuff. And all I have here by way of an introduction at this stage are some questions for you to consider in order to prepare you a bit for what you're going to hear. Okay, now my introductions can be a bit long, I know, but just bear with me and do consider these questions, because if you think about these questions, think about your life a bit and just try and get into the headspace of these questions, it will help you as you listen to the conversation. All right, this is a fact that if you try to think about the subject of the conversation first, or if you try to imagine or personalize the context of the conversation you're about to listen to, you will find it easier to understand and easier to follow. This is true in exam preparation courses and stuff. People, we always recommend that you have a quick look at the questions to get an idea of what the topic of the conversation is going to be before you listen to it, and start to imagine, start to personalize that stuff, and sort of, you know, think about the topic. That's going to be going to prepare you much better for listening and understanding the conversation. So think about these questions, right? This is going to prepare you for the conversation, and hopefully you'll understand it more. As you get older, does your perception of other people change as you get older? For example, if you see a group of 18-year-olds, how do you feel? Like, let's say, if you're like Paul and you're in your 30s, you're sort of in your early 30s or approaching your mid-30s, or if you're like me, you're in your early 40s. If you see a group of younger people, let's say 18-year-olds, how do you feel? Like, do you feel like isolated from them? Do you feel like you are similar to them? Or do you feel like there's a big difference between you and them? How do you feel? If you see people who are in their retirement, if they're elderly people, old people, how do you feel then? Do you feel sort of close to them? Do you feel like you understand what they're going through? How does it make you feel when you see people of different ages? How do you feel about the passage of time and getting older? How does life change as you move from being a teenager into a young adult and then into being middle-aged and then retirement age and old age? What are the changes that we go through? What do you think of the way society views old people? What's the kind of status of old people in society where you are? Are they looked after? Are they sort of represented? Are they respected fully in your society? What about having children? Does it change your life? And if it does, how? Is it a change for the better? In what ways? What about your lifestyle? How are you living your life at the moment? Are you healthy? Are you good at looking after yourself? Do you keep yourself fit and do enough exercise? If not, why not? Have you managed to find a sport or exercise routine that suits you and that you enjoy? How about your diet and eating habits? Do you manage your diet well? Do you make sure you're staying healthy and eating the right things? How about drinking alcohol? Have you got that sort of under control? Do you do that in moderation? What about your daily routine? Getting up in the morning, all the things you do all throughout the day. Do you manage to get enough stuff done in your average day? What is your daily routine? Could you improve it in any way? How much discipline do you have in your life? How motivated and disciplined are you about doing things that don't bring you instant results? For example, are you prepared to go out running even if you don't really want to, because you know that it's good for you ultimately? How about like your study routine? Are you prepared to like get your head down and do a bit of work on your English, even though it might not really be that enjoyable in the moment? Do you think you need to change your lifestyle as you get older? Is that an easy thing to do? What about your parents? What influence did your parents have on your life? Obviously a lot of influence, but how do you feel about the influence they've had on you? Do you ever judge the way your parents brought you up? Do you ever compare yourself to your parents? Do you ever feel like you can't live up to their expectations, or that you can't live up to the example that they set for you in their life? Maybe you look at your parents and look at maybe successes or failures, or perceived successes or failures of your parents, and kind of compare yourself to them. Were either of your parents often not there when you were growing up? Were they kind of absent for whatever reason? Maybe they were working. Maybe one of them or both of them worked a lot and wasn't always there. How do you feel about that? At what age do people leave home and become independent in your country? What kind of time should you spend with your child? Or what kind of time would you hope your parents spent with you? Should you always be there as a parent all the time? Or is it okay to be absent sometimes, as long as you're working hard and making money to help support them? If you have kids or you're planning to have kids, what kind of example should you show to your children throughout your life? What aspects of your personality do you want them to inherit from you? Maybe you've got like good features and bad features, or good aspects or bad aspects about you. Which of those things do you hope that they inherit? Which of those things do you hope they don't inherit? Which aspects of your personality would you rather they didn't learn? And how are you dealing with that, or how are you planning to deal with that kind of thing? How do you pass on the good things and prevent them from picking up the bad things? Do you need to say yes more in your life? Do you feel like you need to be more positive? Or do you need to learn how to say no more to people? As you get older, do you feel that you're becoming more open-minded or less open-minded? Are you still happy to meet and get to know new people and see new places in your life as you get older? And is Paul ready to be a dad? Is he looking forward to it? Is he in the right stage of his life for parenthood? These are the sorts of questions we're talking about in this episode. Not directly answering them, but sort of these are the topics we're talking about and the things we're thinking about. Okay? So without any further ado, here is my conversation with Paul, and here we go. Right, so Amber's had to go and pick up her child, as usual, her son, because she can't...
That'll be me soon. Yeah. The next podcast, I'll have a... I mean, most likely the next time I'm on the podcast, I'll have a...
Quite possibly.
A little Parisienne.
Yeah, little girl.
A little girl.
That's right.
And we didn't need more Parisiennes in the world, but I've decided to create another one.
Well, yeah, you'll be able to at least try to tutor her in the ways of righteousness as she grows up.
Exactly.
That's what we try and do.
Yeah.
Try and bring up the good ones.
We're just going to make my daughter and your daughter hang out as friends so they only speak English together.
Yeah.
So that they learn good English.
Yeah, let's hope so. Yeah. Yeah, we must. Yeah, we must get them to hang out together. But mine's going to be probably, well, yours... Yeah,
it'll be a while before they start hanging out. It'll be maybe 2 years before they start. Yeah, I mean, more than that.
Because mine's going to be a year and a half older than yours.
Mm.
But as they get older, that difference will become less and
of
less.
Of course, yeah. I wonder at what stage that's... Maybe when they're four and two and a half is too big of a difference, I think. Because two and a half, she might not be speaking yet.
No, she should be speaking at about two and a half. She should be speaking some words then.
I think, yeah, maybe I don't four know. And two and a half might work.
Yeah, that might be the beginning.
And I think two and three and a half might work.
Yeah,
when ours are speaking, that'll probably start.
And hopefully, when they get to teenagers,
yeah, that'll
when
be
they
fun.
Get to that time, like, God, you know, you like mine will be 18, and yours would be 16 and a half.
Yeah,
I think that's more likely to be a social situation. You know, they could get on with each other.
Oh,
then,
God, can you imagine that?
I know. Can you imagine?
Horrible. Like, I just can't think that far. I can't imagine myself being.
It's not that far, man. It's not that long, really.
Well, it's half of what I've already... It's more than half of my life so far. Wait.
So you are how old?
32.
32. Yeah, so that's 18, isn't it? Or is it 16? 16.
16.
Yeah, it's half.
So that's
32.
Half of my life added on to what I've... And that, for me, sounds like an eternity. I know it's not that far away. Because what was I thinking about the other... Whoa, hello.
Yeah, because you're holding the microphone down.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Oh.
Sorry, I'll bring it back up.
Okay,
it might just be because the volume in my headphones is louder than...
Oh, is it?
Yeah, if you turn the volume down.
I'll turn that down then.
What was I thinking about the other day? Yeah, I was in a... Oh, that was what it was. That was exactly what it was. So I was doing a comedy show with Toppy Toe.
Yeah.
They were on tour
for
the European elections. And we were a gig. Well, yes. We were our gig, but it was comedy and a concert.
Yeah.
And the concert afterwards was a rapper that no one's ever heard of, but he has millions of fans and they're all like, you know, less than 18 years old. These fans. And I was just thinking, that's crazy because I don't know. I'm looking at these young kids going, I mean, for me, they're not young kids. Like they're 18 years old. For me, I kind of still feel like I'm 22. So I don't feel far away from them.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh God, like I'm almost double their age. And then the thought came in. I was like, man, when my daughter is my age, she's going to then be looking at people their age doing the same. Like it's, and it's like it was just like this weird.
Just the realization of how quickly time goes and how, you sort of become old in other people's eyes, even though you don't really feel old.
Yeah, it's difficult. Like I mean, it's difficult. It's when I think about it too much, I get like really down about it.
But I mean, you have to be sort of philosophical about it, don't you? Mm. You have to kind of think, well, like the aging process, no one can do anything about that. Getting older, yeah. That's not our fault. That's just numbers.
Yeah.
Like, and to get upset or depressed about that is, it's like literally nothing you can do about yeah. time passing. So there's no point yeah. worrying about that at all. And everyone gets old if they're
yeah.
lucky.
Yeah. Well, it's, I think it's also the, I don't know, the fact that with Addy, like, we had sort of firsthand experience of her dad being old. Like, he was 82 when he passed away, mm-hmm. her grandma 96 when she passed away, and they were like the two, they were her parents basically. Her dad was old and her grandma was one that brought her up, and, mm-hmm. and like, we saw how like shit their lives were at that stage of life, you know, and it's the same as what we were talking about with Deanne earlier on, like, you know, like, she's lived an amazing
life. That wasn't on the podcast.
No, but it's just like this idea of
we were talking about someone that we know, someone we know who's 85 years old and she's still doing stand up.
Well, still doing, I don't know. I think she must have started it recently, or
no. So Deanne actually she's someone I'd like to interview on this podcast, because yeah, I think
I'd love to find out her story.
I want to find out her story as well. So Deanne, listeners, is someone that we know through stand up, and she's like 85, I think. She's in her 80s,
yeah.
And she's doing stand-up comedy with us, you know, in the same shows as us. But she originally was an entertainer in the 1960s.
Really?
What do they call that kind of entertainment?
Burlesque? Like, vaudeville?
Sort of the burlesque vaudeville era in Paris, burlesque. So burlesque. She wasn't a dancer. Right. She wasn't one of those, because
so she was here doing that?
Yeah, she came wow. from the States and moved to Paris in the 60s.
Wow.
I don't really know all the reasons why. I need to interview her yeah. and find out all about it and see if she's got some stories to tell.
That's the thing, like, that I...
But so she came and she ended up working as a sort of a musical entertainer. So I think she played piano and sang. And these days she plays the ukulele, because uh-huh. it's like so easy for her to take the instrument yeah. to shows, you know. And being 85, like, a ukulele is not too heavy and yeah. stuff. And so she does these little comedy songs on the ukulele and things like that. So I think she's been doing entertainment of sorts for a long time.
Yeah. But I just get the impression that as a society, as a Western society, we don't really care about older people anymore. We just, we kind of forget them a little bit, when in reality, like, even at 32, I'm like, I've got stories to tell. I've got stuff that I could, you know, experiences that I've been through mm-hmm. that could help people, that can whatever, and that are just interesting stories. And that's why I'm doing stand-up, because I want to share those stories.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine when I'm 80, like, how much more I will have to say.
Yeah.
But we don't, like, we, I don't know, we as a society, we don't really care. Like, I just see old people, they're all lonely. Their families don't care about them a lot. They put into, like, old people's homes. You know, there's just like this thing of, like, we yeah. don't appreciate older people for everything that they can, you know, I don't know. It's just a weird, I don't know.
It's a tricky one. I think that, because we live in an aging society now,
yeah.
More because as people live longer and the birth rate potentially goes down,
yeah.
which it appears to be doing,
yeah.
We'll have more old people. Yeah. And, you know, like, so maybe that will change. Let's hope
maybe,
so.
Yeah. Because,
you know, I think
that's the thing that I work. That's the thing that I think when I think about it, it gets me down more, is like, when I don't mind getting old, but I'm scared about what I see in society now towards older people,
yeah.
that'll happen to
me. So you're concerned that as you get older, your status will kind of go down, and that the people just won't be interested in you anymore. Or just that feeling of, like, when you go to a show
yeah.
to do stand up and you look at the audience and yeah. they're all like 18, 19 yeah. year olds, and you worry about what they think of you, and they think to you're concerned. Like, I would be concerned about this, that I would be concerned that they, don't think I'm relevant, and that therefore they're judging me on, like, oh, he, look at him, he's over 40, so we don't care what he has to say, that sort of thing. And that's only going to kind of increase as we get yeah. older and older. Is that what you're talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I think it's just more the loneliness part of it, I think. Like, because I see my mum, she's 70 something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's at home in Canterbury. Really, she doesn't do anything.
She lives in Canterbury.
Yeah, she doesn't have anything going on. Like, her life is social media following my life, basically.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, it you know, it makes me sad a little bit, because I know that, you know, you have kids and you know, and I left, you know, and I feel bad now, because I feel like I should be with her more. So
especially if you're going to have a daughter, she will want to. So what you're saying is that as we move through life, our role in society and therefore our value in that society changes.
Yeah.
And when you get to a certain age, when you're, you know, retired, basically,
yeah,
what is it that we will contribute to society?
Yeah.
Will we have no value anymore? And we'll feel sidelined and ignored.
Well, because that's what I feel like people who are retired and, you know, after 65, I feel like that's what that's how we think of people.
I don't know if we all do, you know.
Not all, but I think as a society in general.
Generally, maybe in general, like, in society, we don't value older people enough.
Yeah, like you don't see them in films that much. You don't see them on TV that much.
Yeah.
You don't see them doing anything really. In the media that much, and so, you know, all you see is like reality TV stars are all 18, Instagram people are all 16, and it's just like the general, like, oh, we don't know what to do with old. That's the thing, we don't know what to do with old people,
especially older women as well, because like in movies there's always like a few roles for the older men. Like, there are in movies, there are certain kind of characters that can be older men.
Yeah.
And you see actors, you know, aging actors that are still getting roles. But for women, it's just like the roles disappear when they hit even 50 or even less than that. They all just disappear. So,
It depends on the industry. But yeah, it's just, there are more older women than older men, because men tend to die earlier. So there's more old women that I see, you know, in our neighborhood, like doing their shopping on their own because they must. You know, Addie's grandma was one of those that she unfortunately lost her husband early on in life.
Yeah,
she never got married again and that kind of stuff. So it's just, I don't know. It's just this weird sort of. It's not the fact that, oh, I'm getting older age wise that's bothering me.
Yeah.
I mean, physically, I can feel myself. It's weird, because as soon as like we are having a baby, or that we know that we're having a baby, I feel like my body has been like, cool, now that I know that your sperm works, the rest of you is not working. So I've got like these like the 32 has been, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, you get you 32 for me has been the age that I've realized that I've gotten older. Like, I've got pains where I've never had them before.
Uh-huh.
I've had difficulties doing stuff that I've never had before. Like, I've got pain in my arm constantly. Like, it's a constant, like, in a specific the way I move it aches. I tried going running again like I do every year, and then I had a really bad pain in my foot. Like, all this stuff has happened this year, and I'm just like,
I have to say, I like listening to you talk about all the pain and discomfort. There's actually quite a lot of humor in that, you know.
Maybe.
Like, as comedians, we're always looking for things to talk about.
Yeah.
You could talk about this, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, this is quite funny. Like, talking about how you've got a pain in your foot.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I always remember up until 32, always listening to people who were older complaining about aches and pains and stuff like that. I'm just like, I don't understand how the body just, and now it impregnated someone, and now my body's like, cool, we don't need you anymore. You've reproduced yourself, and now you can die.
We don't need your feet anymore.
Exactly.
It's like, let the feet go now.
It's horrible. And I put on weight a lot quicker this year. It's just this specific year.
Yeah.
Weirdly.
But I mean, in a way, as a person who's older than you, I'm very happy to hear all of these things, because it's like, welcome to the team, Paul.
Welcome to the other side.
Yeah, welcome to the team. We all embrace you with open arms. Who is it I heard talking about this recently in an interview? Mark Ruffalo, the actor. He was talking about, you know, preparing for his role in Avengers Endgame. Yeah. And the interviewer was like, you know, how about, you know, your fitness routine, and is it more difficult, like, keeping in shape and stuff? And he's like saying, yeah, it's terrible, and because, you know, I'm getting old. I don't know how old he is now, but he's in his late 40s or something.
Yeah.
He said, like, everything hurts all the time now.
Yeah.
And he's talking to Scarlett Johansson and saying, you know, she was saying, yeah, it hurts more and more as you get older. And he said to her, just wait until you're my age, and you'll find that, like, even lying in bed for a night makes your body hurt. Like, and it's kind of true. Sometimes I feel like that. I mean, I'm not that old. I'm 42 next week. But sometimes I'll just feel like just lying in bed is just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I just can't get a comfortable position.
Yeah.
And it's just, you just sort of learn to live with it.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's better than others. Like these, at the moment, at this period, I'm sort of feeling quite comfortable in my body. But, yeah, you've got to, we have to, you have to try and keep fit, think you have to be more organized. You've got to try and stay, live healthier, drink less, and generally look after yourself as you get older.
So it was funny because going along those lines, when I was on tour last week, there was me, Urbain,
yeah,
and a guy called Pierre Thévenoud, who's who's young also. So three of us comedians were performing.
The three of you the same age, or is
me and Urbain are the same age? I think he's 31.
Yeah,
Pierre I think might be a couple of years younger, or maybe the same age.
It's around the same,
give or take 5 years.
Okay,
and we were after the show. We were out with like the boss of Toppy Toe, who's mid 40s. The guy who runs Europa Vox, who also runs Rock on Seine, like the he's 40 odd, mid 40s.
He's a promoter.
The third guy who is part of the European Union for some reason, whatever it was. These three guys who are like all older than us, I think they were closer to 50, to be fair.
Yeah.
Or mid 50s. Anyway, we were all knackered. So we end up going to sleep like at 2 a.m. or 3. And these older guys were out to like 6 a.m. Drinking. And I'm just, we were like, how are you doing it? They're like, wait until you have kids, because when you have kids, you just sleep less and you get used to sleeping less. Yeah. So now we don't need to sleep. Like if we go to bed at 6, we can get up at 10 and we're fine. I'm like, okay.
Strangely enough, I think I'm in better shape now. If I hadn't had a child 16 months ago, I think I wouldn't be in as good shape as I am now. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, weirdly enough, having a kid does kind of keep you a little bit younger, in a sense that you kind of train. It's like training every day.
Yeah.
And every day,
keeps on your toes.
I pick her up and put her down like lots of times during the day, which is like doing kettlebell training, right? It's the best form of kettlebell training. Yeah. I make sure that I do my squats when I'm picking her up. Oh, I don't, bend from the back. I try and bend from the legs. And so I'm like trying to incorporate workouts into my day. And we live on the top floor of the building. So we have to go up and down the stairs, and I go up and down those stairs a lot. Sometimes, many times in a day. Sometimes I go up and down I go up and down the stairs at least once with my daughter in my arms every day. Sometimes I actually put her in the pram and carry the pram all the way down the stairs and back up again.
Did you sell the old one? The old pram?
No, we're going to take it to my parents' place and leave it there, and then that'll be the pram for when we go back to my parents.
Right, okay.
So we're not selling it. We might sell it at some point, but we're not selling it yet. So, yeah, like having kids can keep you in shape, weirdly, because it's on the job training.
Yeah. Well, I figured that, like, I'm so not disorganized, but I just have no structure to my life right now. There's no structure to when I wake up. There's no structure to when I do anything. There's no structure to the work day. Well, Adi will sometimes, at 11:30 at night be like, oh, can you just make sure this email is fine before I send it tomorrow morning? Mm-hmm. Like, there's just no structure to what we're doing. And I'm hoping that having a kid is like, cool. Well, now from this time to this time, I'll be on my phone on social media.
Yeah.
Everyone leaves me alone. From this time to this time is family time. From this time to this time is other time. Like, we structure the day a bit more to be more productive. And included in that, I'd like to get back to do it. Because I figured, I did this when I came back from a late show the other night, and I got a McDonald's at like 2 a.m. And then when I got back to my flat, with the 7 floors, right? They're not similar to, it's like the stairs going up is like very small. It's like a really tight staircase.
Spiral staircase.
But there's 7 floors and 3 basement floors. So what I did was, and I parked my scooter at -1,
the lower ground. Yeah.
So then I walked down, I went into the stairway, I walked down to the bottom.
Yeah.
And then just sprinted to the top, to the seventh.
At like 2:30 in the morning.
At 2:30 in the morning.
With a McDonald's inside your stomach.
Yeah. And then like walked back down to the first floor, which is where we're at. I thought, I don't need to go to the park. I need to go to, I just need to do that like three times in the morning.
Yeah. And but just, it might be worth walking up it once and then
to
down,
warm up
and then sprinting up it and then walking up it again.
Yeah.
You know, rather than just at 2:30 in the morning, your body's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, so I need to work. I can't stand my, like, I've just got this belly that I've had forever, but I, for some reason, I see it more now in photos and stuff. So that's why I wear black all the time. I'm just black.
Yeah, I noticed that. I thought that's just because you'd become more and more Parisian.
No, I can't deal with my skin.
I'm not wearing dark colors today, but I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or because I live in Paris now, but like, my clothing has gone progressively darker shades, towards the point where I'm like choosing to buy black jeans and black jackets instead. Like, you know, 10 years ago, no, I never wore black.
Yeah.
It was just not one of the colors I wore. And these days, sometimes I go out and I realize I'm in navy blue and black.
Yeah.
And that's it. And all the trainers, if I'm buying a pair of Converse, I'm like, I'm going to buy black.
Yeah.
You know, just black Converse.
Yeah. Like just these
like your black Nike shoes, that you've got.
The thing is, like, I bought three pairs of the same jeans, three of the same jumpers, and six black t-shirts.
Yeah.
And so what's great is I don't waste any time anymore figuring out what I'm wearing. I just get up, I wear the same clothes every day. But since the beginning of January, since I finished my show, I've worn this same outfit for the last... Now it's getting into summer. It's starting to get warm though. Yeah. Like, we were out yesterday because it was quite nice in Paris, and so we were out yesterday in the park, and I felt like I was getting warm. I was just in a black. Took the jumper off, and I was in a black.
Because
t-shirt.
In the sunlight, the black absorbs. They say the black absorbs the heat.
Yeah,
of the
so
light.
I need to figure out like a summer outfit, but I just can't. I just don't want to bother with clothes anymore.
Just change. Stick with the black trousers. And just change to white for your tops.
Yeah, but then white. I look massive.
Do you?
Yeah.
But you don't look as massive as you think.
No, of course not, because you always think you look bigger than you do. But I just see photos with my beer tits and my beer belly.
How about the beer drinking? Since you bought that electric scooter, you've been drinking less, right?
I have been drinking less.
And have you tried cutting out the booze for a month or something?
I did in January, and that worked, but I just like it.
Yeah.
The problem is, now that I've got a scooter though, I walk less. Because before I would walk to the metro 8 minutes or 9 minutes.
I do tons of walking.
Do you? I do no loads. Walking anymore. And so I need to get off that. I don't know. What I need to do, because I can't remember who was, what I need to do is just work out in the morning, which means that I can allow myself to be lazy and get transport and take my scooter from my door to another door and not walk. So I just need to make up for that exercise by running or doing some sort of...
Yeah, I feel the same way about sport and keeping fit though, because you need to find something that you enjoy doing. Yeah. Like I think I'm in some ways very, very lazy. And if I don't really want to do something, I don't do it at all. I'll find ways to avoid doing it.
Yeah.
And so exercises like that, you know, I could go to the gym and do workouts like twice a week, but I just don't enjoy going to the gym. There's nothing about it that I like.
But I think, is it laziness or procrastination?
I don't know what it is. I think it's more like I'm not prepared to do things that I don't enjoy. You know, the idea of... What's the expression for it? Delayed gratification.
Yeah.
Delayed gratification. So the idea being that if there's something that you want to do that just makes you feel good, that you like doing, that's gratifying, like, for example, eating some chocolate.
Yeah.
Right. That you put it off until later.
Yeah.
Or if it's a work thing, if you've got a choice of what kind of work to do,
yeah.
You think, am I going to work on the difficult, important stuff, or am I going to work on the stuff that makes me feel good here and now?
Yeah.
What we should do is try to delay that gratifying work and work on the more difficult stuff and then work on the more, you know, enjoyable stuff later. So delayed gratification. Basically, just like... you know, if you walk past a boulangerie and you see like a nice pan of chocolate in the window, that you say to yourself, I won't have that now.
Yeah.
You know, that's delayed gratification. So apparently it's something that we're supposed to do. So for me, it's kind of like I need probably to do more delayed gratification.
Maybe, yeah.
Or maybe I should be more prepared to put in the hard work, because, you know, no pain, no gain, right?
Yeah.
But I always feel like, oh, I just don't want the pain.
Yeah.
So I don't go to the gym.
Yeah, I'm like that. I think I figured out what my I think my problem is that I want immediate results for everything. So
yeah,
going to the gym, I know that in 6 months I'll look better, but it's too, I need some sort of instant thing that shows, you know, yeah. it's similar to my, to the documentary series, that we made, Stereo
yeah.
Trip.
Yeah.
Like that might end up being sold to UK TV. It might end up blowing up somewhere else.
Yeah.
But it's not in France that it's going to blow up because it's in English and also it's on a paid TV channel.
Yeah.
And so because I was so used to the previous show, What the Fuck, being instantly gratifying, like the video goes out, gets a couple of 100,000 views in a day,
yeah.
straight away I'm like, yes, it's worth me doing this hard work.
You go from writing it to filming it to putting it on YouTube in like a matter of days, potentially.
About a month.
Oh, it's a month.
Yeah, but it's still, it was more...
But it's pretty quick.
Yeah, but it's more the release... And the instant views afterwards
yeah.
for that specific thing. For Stereo Trip, it's like, ugh, which is kind of now why my show's online. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, I hope people see it.
Yeah.
And so it's the same thing with sport. Like, I don't want to wait 6 months it's different. And that's why we go back to why I don't read novels or I don't watch TV shows, because it's too, like, I need the fix now, you know, and I need to learn better how to, and that's why maybe subconsciously, that's why I procrastinate, because I finished the subtitles to my show the day that I was releasing it, and it was too late because I didn't realize it was going to take so long to export. Whereas I could have done the subtitles 3 months before, but because I wasn't going to see the result
yeah.
and people weren't going to see the result for another right. 3 months, I think subconsciously I pushed it out to the latest possible
That's
time.
Kind of, I guess, what I mean by delayed gratification, that you choose to do the work that you don't get the immediate results from. So so the pattern is, let's say if it's about keeping fit and healthy,
yeah.
you don't want to go to the gym or do the running because you don't get immediate results from it. Although it will make you feel good that day. It will.
Yeah.
Running and doing exercise makes you feel good when you've finished. I mean, even if it's just like, oh, I'm not running anymore, that's good. But like,
you know, that's like, for me, that's exactly it. Like, it doesn't,
but also it does. You do get endorphins and all that stuff.
Yeah,
right? It's good for you. It's yeah, good. Yeah. It releases chemicals in your brain that make you feel good after you've
yeah.
done it. If you've done like proper exercise,
yeah.
you do feel good. It's very good way of dealing with depression and dealing with like insomnia and stuff
yeah.
like that. But you kind of think, I don't want to do this jogging thing because I'm not going to enjoy it. I'm not going to get the results immediately. So you actually don't do it. Yeah, I'm the same. Like for me doing exercise, I can't just go and do exercise just because it's going to keep me fit.
Yeah.
I have to do exercise that I just enjoy doing there and then.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't do any exercise, because I can't find anything that I just enjoy doing for its own sake.
I used to love
football.
So football, yeah. So sport, like a specific sport where there's a, like, I used to love playing squash at university with my mate, because it would be fun. It would just be a fun activity.
Yeah.
And that's like a really good workout. The whole body's being worked
out.
That's
for me the most important thing. And also, it's just good for you to do something that's fun.
Yeah.
Like having fun is really good. So the only sport I can think of that I would actually want to do is football.
But it just takes 11 other people to play.
Yeah,
that's,
you've got to
problem.
Get all the right people. I don't know the right people. And also here in Paris, I mean, this is the laziness. This is where the laziness comes in. And also just the inconvenience, because my life is these days, like, it's hard to find the time. But like, the to do it here in Paris, you'd need to go to a football like club, a sports center that's like on the edge of Paris.
Yep.
So you have to get an RER or get like a metro that takes you quite far away, and you lose an hour of your day just getting there and getting back, and then finding the right people to hang around with. And for me, there's also like the other thing, which is like the language barrier of like, there's that sense of like, oh, but I'm going to have to go and all going to be in French, so it's I feel uncomfortable.
Well, I met when I was doing a sports chronique, whatever you call it, like a
report.
Yeah, when
the TV.
Yeah, when the Premier League rights got bought by SFR, which is it's equivalent of BT Sports in the UK.
Uh-huh.
I was doing like a 3 minute bit about the different clubs and making fun of Newcastle because whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There was another guy on there. There's a journalist. I can't remember his name now. But he used to work at Eurosport, and it was a bunch of people that they used to go play five-a-side together every week.
Yeah.
And I think they probably still do. And so I signed up, like I was like, yeah, yeah, I'd love to do that. So I went once and it was a bunch of English-speaking people that are doing five-a-side. But I was so shit. Literally, I spent 15 minutes on the field. And then I was finished. I was like, I'll go in goal for the whole rest of the hour.
Because you were a bat. You were the worst.
I wasn't fit. Yeah, I was.
Oh, you were. You weren't fit.
I was good, but I'm just unfit. I was completely unfit because I hadn't done any sport in about 10 years.
How did it feel? Tell me.
It felt horrible. Like it was embarrassing that I was so unfit. But it was just I couldn't.
Physically. To describe the physical feeling.
I just couldn't keep up. Like I couldn't run. I couldn't. I was looking for my breath. Like the whole time, I was just like.
Out of breath all the time.
Yeah, and there was things that I wanted to do, but I just couldn't, and so I just went in goal.
Yeah, now, I know what you mean. Like you're running around the football pitch, you are out of breath a lot, which means you get pain in your chest, just that burning feeling of like your lungs trying to get the air, and also not having enough oxygen, and so you lose strength in your legs, and you can't run, you can't sprint, and then you can't control the ball or kick it very very well.
Yeah.
So that's the fitness. So it's not that you're shit at football.
No,
it's just
I'm all right. I'm actually pretty decent. I always have been fairly good at football.
Yeah. You must be if you're. I imagine it runs in the family. Your brother's a professional footballer.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it does.
But anyway,
I need I need a sport. I can't just like running. I've gone running a few times, and after maybe 2 weeks is the most that I've held out in a run. Like maybe a month. Maybe I did a month. Here's how like. When I've got the right motivation, I can. A couple of years ago, my mates from England that you've met, the four of us were on like a Nike running challenge.
Yeah.
And it was the month of August and it was like the first to 50K.
First one to get to 50K.
You don't win anything. You just get the bragging. It's just like a...
And you're all on an online portal which records your distances. Yeah. So you can actually check in to see how much distance each one of you has done.
I did it in 10 days.
You did the 50K in 10 days.
I went out running and I did I probably did 3K the first day, 5 the second, because I was like, okay, I'm warming up. And then like maybe 6 or 7. And then I did like 2 or 3 10Ks.
Yeah.
That was it. In 10 days, I'd won. And like I'd beat all of them, floored all of them.
But that's the thing. It's that the element of competition makes it fun.
That's it.
That's why football is, you run around and run around. Like when I play football, I run and run and run and I get out of breath. But I keep going because I just enjoy trying to, you know, tackle the players and trying to score goals.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the element of competition that makes it fun. Yeah. And then I'm not thinking about I'm doing this to keep fit. I'm doing this. I'm doing this just because it's fun.
Yeah.
And I like the
exactly
the being with the people.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're on your own, it's like it's really hard to develop the sense of competition because you know I know it's, for some people it's exactly what they like, and I've got people who listen to this while they're running, and if you are running while you listen to this, keep going, don't stop, there you go, motivation.
Beat your record from yesterday,
left foot, right foot,
well, and even Nike have started doing that, like started a long time ago, they started paying celebrities to, when you're listening to music, if you hit 5K, they'll be like Beyonce is coming on your ears being like, hey girl, you go girl, yeah. Like to give you more motivation. I guess it works, but yeah, it's just on my own. Like the cool thing with tracking runs is that like you go, all right, tomorrow I'm going to try and do 100 more meters in the same time. If I'm running for 25 minutes, I'm going to do 200 more meters, 300. And so you try and, you know, bring down your average, but then you're like, well, the thing is I took a different route today and the roads are slightly higher or lower. So you can't really compare the result. It's just, I don't know. I've got zero motivation to do things that don't have instant results.
Yeah. Well, I mean, me too. And like the thing about playing football is you do get instant results because if you make that tackle or if you make a good pass or if you score a goal, I mean, it's really good feeling. And so you get lots of these little good feelings all the time. Whereas running, it's just, I don't know. I just personally, I find it really hard to keep the motivation up. And I'm just like running on just all the time. I'm thinking, I just want to go home. I just don't want to be doing this. Yeah. Whereas for some people, it's really it's really good for them and they really get it and they really enjoy it. And stuff.
I'm envious of those people. It's like, for me, it's the equivalent of, imagine you go to the kitchen every day and you spend half an hour cooking a meal that you don't eat. But 6 months later, you then start eating the meals that you've started creating. Like you make a meal,
yeah.
Then you put it to the side, and then you eat something else. You eat, mm-hmm. you eat not what you've made, and so but you are forced to go into the kitchen every day for half an hour to make food that you'll eat maybe 6 months or a year down the line, which is the equivalent of me of like I'm going running. I'm not enjoying going running, yeah. but I know that if I do it every day 6 months down the line, I'll look better and I'll feel better, but it really bums me out.
What do you think the successful people are doing, Paul? Because you know this is what you know. You read
in sport or in life?
Just generally, yeah, in life.
They get up at 5 a.m. and they get their work done before everyone else wakes up, and they're always positive. And life's a marathon, not a sprint. And all this, like,
but do all the successful people do that, or is it just some of them? Because there's like Casey Nice, what's his face?
Neistat.
Casey Neistat, the YouTuber, and who's the actor? He's in Transformers films. He's from Boston.
Shia LaBeouf.
No, he's from Boston. He's in The Departed. He's got a brother who is a pop star. Mark Wahlberg, right? He gets... Oh, come on, I've got to find his workout routine. It's freaking ridiculous. He gets up like... 2 hours before he goes to bed, right? This is how he's like before he's yeah. That's just not possible, but that's just an example.
He gets up 2 hours before he goes to bed.
Yeah, he's getting up so early that he's not even gone to bed yet. Mark Wahlberg, I want his fitness routine, please.
Fuck, I don't understand. Like, I do understand, but it annoys me that I can't do that.
Right, and I'm going to find a description of Mark Wahlberg's grueling daily routine.
I was listening to Joe Rogan.
Okay. So on a typical day, the actor, this is from a BBC report, Mark Wahlberg has revealed a punishing daily routine involving getting up in the middle of the night to work out. The 47-year-old, known for keeping in shape, detailed his regime while answering fans' questions on Instagram. On a typical day, the actor rises at 2:30 in the morning. Fuck off. Like, no, sorry, no. Before half an hour of prayers, he prays for half an hour.
Okay.
Fair enough. All right. After breakfast at 3:15, he does a 95-minute workout, followed by another meal, shower, snack, golf, and cryo chamber recovery, all before 10:30. He goes to bed at 7:30, he revealed. Like, sorry, Mark, no, I'm not going to do that.
No.
Like I understand there's benefits to doing that, but for me the benefits are having a life in the evening,
yeah.
and being in bed. And for me the benefit of that is like of not getting up at 2:30 is waking up maybe at 2:30,
yeah,
and then rolling over onto the cold side of the pillow,
yeah.
and falling back to sleep again.
It's amazing. Oh. I can't. I just it's. Because I watch a lot of YouTube now that I'm quite active on the platform.
Yeah.
So I see all these motivational things and people. There's a guy called Matt Diavella whose videos are really good. Like, he's really genuine and all that kind of stuff. But it's just like, and he also calls out bullshit at some point. But there's still like this thing of, and it goes back to what I was saying in the previous podcast about like waking up late is like a bad thing in society.
Yeah.
And I don't know. If I woke up early and did all that kind of stuff, I would probably end up probably doing more stuff. I remember that, honestly, I feel like the most amount of work that I got done and the most productive I was in the past couple of years was January to March last year, or February to April last year, sorry, when I was vlogging every day.
Yeah.
When I was doing a vlog every day on YouTube, which meant I was filming the whole day, trying to create a story out of nothing,
yeah.
editing it in the evening, and on the nights that I was performing my show, which was three nights a week at that stage. So on a Friday, I don't even remember my routine of on a Thursday or Friday or Saturday, I'd wake up, film stuff during the day, do my stand-up show at 8 p.m., get home at 11, edit from 11 till 3. The video would be out at 7 a.m.
You'd set it to automatically publish at 7.
I'd publish it at 3 in the morning, but it would be a delayed publish until 7
right,
in the morning.
I see.
And the next day, I'd start all again, but the next day, the video would be out at 7. I wouldn't be up at 7. Like, yeah. The video would be out at 7. I'd maybe get up at 12. By the time I got up at 12, there were comments on the 7 o'clock video, so I had some stuff to bounce off of for the next day's content.
Yeah.
And I felt super productive. And since then, I've not really found the productive thing again. Also, that period, like, I didn't have any evenings, really. There were a couple of times where I would film a Q&A session. Or your comments section on one of the same days that I filmed. So I had like a Sunday off where I didn't have to film, but I still had content coming out on the Sunday. And since then, I've not really found a thing. But yeah, it just seems that people get up really early.
These super successful people who we're talking about, like these famous routines, like, I mean, that Mark Wahlberg one, I mean, that's just ridiculous. It's getting up at 2:30, come
mental,
on.
Yeah. Oh, Joe Rogan, listening to him, though, he works out every day, or at least 5 days a week. But he's doing comedy in the evenings. Every day he's doing a set at the Comedy Store or whatever, getting home quite late. And he's doing almost a podcast every day as well, like a three-hour conversation. That I don't know if he's preparing any of it, but it's just a lot.
Jamie does a lot of the work for that.
Probably.
And he just sits there and talks about Brazilian jiu-jitsu and when
UFC.
when animals attack.
Yeah.
Right? Have you noticed? They do – every episode comes back to UFC – doing jiu-jitsu and animals fighting with each other and buffaloes fighting lions and then DMT stories.
Or stand-up stories of like, I like those the most when they're just talking about the industry and stuff. Because I know that Steve Jobs and Tim Cook both, they would get up at five, or Tim still gets up at five. Steve Jobs would get up ridiculously. Like, Tim gets up at 5, reads a bunch of emails, answers all his emails before 9 a.m, and obviously has breakfast and does whatever he does before 9 a.m. He's then at the office at 9, is in meetings all day, you know, kissing babies, doing whatever he has to do as CEO of the company, and then goes to bed quite early. I don't know where they have time to spend with their families. I don't get it.
Like, these guys, right, they're public figures who are known for all this shit, right, for being successful people. But in their personal lives, they might be a disaster. I mean,
this is true.
Might not be getting the rich personal experience that we get, which means they might not get to turn over onto the cold side of the pillow and sleep for another hour. Or they might not get the enjoyment of eating a pan au chocolat.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a stupid joke.
I'm below what I should be in my relationship. Like, I feel like I spend not enough time with my wife. I feel like I spend too much time on social media working, posting, figuring out, okay, how am I going to post? If I'm going to post this video, how do I need to resize it so that it fits an Instagram thing, but the subtitles don't get cut off? And then what time do I need to post it on Instagram so it gets the most amount of views possible? Like, all of this is going in my head, and I'm thinking about it. And meanwhile, Addy's telling me a story about something that I'm not listening to because I'm too fucking focused on my own shit. Yeah. And I'm hoping that having a baby like fixes some of that.
I don't know, man. I don't think I think we all hope for things when we have our kid, and that things will be fixed. But no, like, the child's not going to fix things for you. But you might change your behavior.
Yeah.
But it might not be that the child's going to fix. You're the one who has to fix.
Of course, I'll fix it. But I think I'm hoping that one of the side effects of losing a lot of sleep and realizing, okay, cool, like, I'm not the only important person. I think I from the people I've spoken to, like, there's something that biologically changes in your brain. Like, it's not all about you anymore. It's about that you've got to keep this person alive.
Yeah, true.
And you've got to think 18 years from now, how are you going to pay for their university? Yeah. How are you going to pay for this? How are you going to do that? And that kind of gives you another, you know, like, when I quit my job, like, that was a motivation. Like, that 6 months of me building my show when I didn't have an income, now that I've got an income, and it's not a steady income, but, you know, if I'm doing shows, I'll get paid, and it's enough to live off and all that kind of stuff. I don't feel like I have that.
It does make you, like, having a child does make you reevaluate things. It's true. And suddenly certain things become much more important, plainly important. And you also realize, well, I'm not going to waste my time on certain other things.
Yeah.
It doesn't fix everything at all by any means, but it does make you reevaluate and shift the importance of certain things. For me also, I'm thinking about how to be a good dad. It's quite difficult to know. Obviously, it's a huge challenge. People say that having a child is like the most difficult thing.
Yeah.
like Bill Burr, of
Bill
course.
Burr's.
You're now thinking of Bill Burr's his routine about
bending over, putting DVDs into DVD players,
sending the kids to bed on some trumped up charges.
Any job you can do in your pajamas is not a job.
So Bill Burr's got a famous routine, listeners, about how he was watching Oprah, and Oprah introduced some women onto the stage as mothers, and she said it's the hardest job in the world being a mother. And Bill Burr obviously then, he couldn't take this, and he does this routine about how it's not the hardest job in the world, that roofing in August when you're ginger is the hardest, yeah. Or ice road truckers, you know.
Deadliest catch.
Yeah, like if you're a fisherman in the North Sea in February or whatever. But it's very funny. But anyway, how do you be the right dad? And I was kind of thinking, so maybe someone like Casey Neistat. He does say in his routine that he spends, a certain amount of time guaranteed with his kids.
Yeah.
But someone who's a workaholic and he's got like a very, very rigid working routine, you kind of think, well, that person isn't spending a lot of quality time with their kids. Like, I'm not getting up early in the morning to do all my work, but I am spending a lot of time with my daughter in a day. I spend a lot of time with her. But then I kind of think, but is just spending time with your child the thing? Because it's no good spending, it's like your daughter doesn't want to grow up spending time with a useless dad. Or spending time with a dad who's not achieving anything else. Like, maybe what children need is not just quality time with you, or not just time with you, but quality time with you. And also, they need someone who is fulfilling themselves in their career as well. And maybe the gift that you can give to your kids is to be someone who has maybe devoted more time to their work than, it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Like, how should we spend our time?
It's an interesting question, because it all might be a subconscious thing, because there's no conscious part of me that goes, I remember spending time with my dad and that was like the most important part of me growing up, or my mum and that was the most important. Like, I don't remember the times that they spent with me.
And I also think, I remember good times spent with my mum and dad. And, like, I think about my dad, for example, and, I often look at his life and sort of compare his life to my life and stuff like that. And the thing for me is that my dad was always a very successful person, and he's kind of like did well at university, went to a good university, did well because he studied hard. He wasn't, privileged or anything. He just got into Oxford, got a degree from that, and then he just sort of had a really good career at the BBC, and he went from job to job, and he ended up in some very good positions, and he worked very hard, and he was very career oriented and stuff. And then sometimes I think, but he was away at work a lot. It would have been nice to have him around a bit more.
Right.
But then I think, what is it though that, so first of all, him being away working meant that we had more money.
Yeah.
And it meant that we could move to a slightly nicer house with a garden, right? Which was nice.
Yeah.
But also, in my life, it gave me this thing that I feel like I need to achieve stuff.
Yeah.
I've got a certain level of drive.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I've got to do something too.
Yeah.
Now, on one hand, that is kind of negative, because it sort of, I judge myself and I always think, I'm not doing well enough.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, I think, well, it's given me something to aim for.
Yeah.
And maybe, if I've achieved anything, maybe partly that's because I've got something to try and aim for. So where, I don't know what good fathering is, whether it's spending time with your kids or whether it is being away and working hard and achieving things, like, which is the thing that is better for the children.
Mm.
I don't know.
It's a very good question. I think my initial reaction, my initial thoughts, is that the goal, from a very animalistic point of view, is that you
provide.
But you also provide specific tools, whether that's subconscious things of, like, you see your dad achieving, so that makes you want to achieve, but you want your kid to be able to fend for itself.
Yeah.
later in life when it decides to leave the nest, right? Right. As all animals, right?
Yeah.
You know, when lions are bringing up the cubs, they're teaching them how to chase wildlife and how to hunt for food,
uh-huh.
so that they're able to do it independently.
Yeah.
Because one day, if the course of life goes as it's supposed to, you die before your kids, right?
Yeah.
And so you want, obviously, in the human world, it's a very different timeline to the animal world. Some animal things, like, they die as soon as the kids are or just able to fend for themselves.
Yeah, some animals have a very short lifespan, yeah. comparatively, and the kids, you know, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, for us, like, we live, at, you know, at the, in a normal human lifespan, normally you have kids between 20 and 30-ish.
And you can see your kids have kids.
You can see your kids have kids. So it's quite a long cycle. So when you die, your kids are usually... almost retired, basically. Like, you know, if your kid's 20 years, if you've had your kid 30 or younger, when your kid retires, they're what, 65? Yeah, 95 is pushing it at 30. But you could, you know, you could...
Yeah, if you have a good, long, healthy life that we all hope for, that it would be... It's not unfeasible to live to the age at which you see your children retire.
Yeah.
Only if you have kids when you're 20...
Yeah,
it's certainly possible. Yeah. To see your
and
kids
so
retire.
So maybe the whole thing about fending for themselves doesn't really count, because, you know.
Well, yeah, but you know, you get to a certain age that you want the kids to quote unquote leave the nest, and that's usually when they're about 18, 19, 20.
Well, in the UK, yeah, in Spain, France, and Italy, it's later.
It's,
yeah, like in France, in England, we've got this culture of you leave home to go to university.
Yeah.
For a lot of the population, that's when you leave.
Yeah.
If you don't go to university, you usually probably stay at home longer. Or you stay in the city that you've lived or the town that you've lived, and you get a job in that town, but you still live at home until you make a decent amount of money that you can move out. You usually move out at that stage, I think, when you get married, and then you move in with the person that you're getting married with. A lot of people, though, like myself and I think you leave. When did you leave? When you went
when
to
I
university?
Left home when I was 19. Yeah, yeah. When I went to university.
Same thing. And I think all my mates, it's the same thing. We all left home because you don't go to university in the same town.
Did come back, though. I mean, I came back for a couple of years, and but it was miserable.
Right,
it felt like a failure to come back.
Yeah, well, and I think it does. And so, but other cultures, like in France, people don't leave home to go to university. They go to university in where they're from.
Yeah,
quite often.
Definitely.
A lot of people do.
Yeah,
but they still go home, and they leave home maybe after university. You know, when they're 23. Yeah. So that's at least another 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Like Addie didn't leave home until she was 27. Right.
Okay.
So that's a completely different. Way of thinking about it. So yeah, it's like what is parenthood at that stage? Like, do you want them to succeed?
But you were saying basically we need to give kids the skills to be able to fend for themselves.
Yeah, like I know
we need to give them tools.
Yeah, I know the negative parts of me and Addy that we need to make sure that. Well, we don't need to make sure, because we're successful as it is.
Yeah,
but one of the two things that we have. Which we don't, we balance each other in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But this is one where it's like a double negative, is that we're both too nice and we're unable to say no to things or mm-hmm. put our foot down to stop people walking over us.
Yeah. Me too. I'm in that category.
And so that is one of the things that, for example, with our daughter, I'd want to find ways to put her through experiences where she can put her foot down and tell people to fuck off when... she needs to.
Not literally.
Well, sometimes literally, yeah, because there's times now in our lives, even way before, even 10 years ago, where I would have liked to tell people to fuck off.
Literally,
like,
using those words.
Potentially, yeah. Just like, fuck off. No, I'm not doing it, or whatever it is. But you're too nice. You're like, yeah, all right, I'll do it. And then
at least finding I know what you mean. It's like avoiding that confrontation of like, I can't do that. Instead, you think, well, it's just easier if I say yes and just do it. And then it's, yeah, exactly.
Typically tonight we're going out for dinner with Marie Charlotte, who's a friend that you've met. She was like, oh, should we go out for dinner? Like initially it was, she was saying it to Addy, like, oh, it'd be cool if you guys came out for dinner. We're like, And she goes, oh, my boyfriend, who we've met as well, who lives in London, it all will be over. And we're like, cool. And like three of his friends. And that's when I was like,
oh no,
I don't want to meet new people. Like, I'm tired of going out and meeting.
Sorry, we're closed.
Yeah. I like,
no more new people.
Yeah. I just have a, specifically with what I do now, like I have a hard time meeting people who, you know, who know who I am. I don't know who they are. And then mm-hmm. we start talking about my career and I just can't be bothered. Like I'm happy with the people that I know. Yeah. I don't mind meeting you out in the street saying hi for a couple of, but I want to spend an evening sat down at a dinner table with you, you know?
And so I said
to Addie, like, no, like I don't want to, and this is the second time it's happened with her. She's like, oh, can I bring my flatmate along? And I'm like, oh fuck. It's ended up being a nice night, but I don't remember her. Yeah. I don't remember. I don't want to do it anymore.
Maybe potentially younger listeners maybe will be surprised to hear that sort of thing. But
When I was young, I was all up for it.
Yeah,
but now,
me too.
I've just met all the people I want to meet.
I don't know what it is, but maybe it's also a male thing as well. I have no idea. But I think it is a genuine phenomenon that you get to a certain point. Like Steve Martin had a routine about it.
Really?
Which is like you get to a certain age and you just like suddenly you just... closed off from new experiences, and it's like, hey, shall we go to the thing? And the answer is like, sorry, we're closed. It's like, no, basically, no, yeah. Sorry. The gate is closed.
You know, something, this is really weird. I like getting older. I have a birthday this month, and I really do enjoy getting older. I thought I wouldn't, but life is easier as you get older because you become prejudiced. Because you've dealt with things, not against race or anything, but just against things. Because you've dealt with them before, and you know it's going to be boring, and you just close the doors. And you people come up and go, hey, let's go try this new thing. Sorry, we're closed.
But guess what? We're going out for dinner.
Oh yeah,
because
with the
boyfriend's friends.
With the boyfriend's friends.
Because we're too nice.
But you know what? Right? Maybe you'll meet these people, and they might become. You might have a good time.
This is true, but I say that every time, and then I regret being like, yeah, okay, cool. We'll go. I don't know. There's just it sounds very grumpy and very old manish, but it's. There's things that we don't want to do that we still do. There's people that we don't want to work with that we still work with because we don't know how to tell them to fuck off.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one of the values that I would like to somehow have. But then that might be to the detriment of something else.
You never know, do you? You never know. It's like almost impossible to call it.
Yeah.
Like if you do teach your daughter to put her foot down and to be a bit more assertive in saying no to things, she might miss out on experiences. Like, for example, when I met my wife, the first time I met, I was happy to stay in my flat. It was a Saturday evening, and I was very happy to stay in and play freaking Red Dead Redemption or something on the PlayStation. I was like ready. It was early February, winter's evening, and I was like, I'm going to stay in and be a sad bastard, and I'm okay with that. And my cousin like was on the phone to me saying, hey, come out. And I was like, nah.
This is in London?
This is in London. This is when I lived in London. I was single. I had my own place. And I was very happy to stay in and, you know, play PlayStation on my own. And I was like, I'm fine. And he said, come out. And I was like, nah, no thanks. He said, no, it's all right, come out. We're going to be, you know, not far from where you are. We're going to be up in Kensington or something. And I was like, nah. And he said, look, there's going to, like, a couple of my mates are coming out with, like, one of my mates is bringing his girlfriend, and she's going to bring some of her friends' friends. So there'll be, like, there will be girls. And I was like,
there will be the ladies.
And I was like, all right, okay then. So he twisted my arm.
Yeah.
And I came out. And I was like going, oh, I really can't be bothered with this. And, you know, going out, like, I don't want to meet new people.
Yeah.
I remember feeling like that.
Already. And how old are you at this stage? Just what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's about 9 years ago. So, I mean, you know, I'm getting on a bit.
So you were at my age.
I was like 32 at the time. So not far from your age.
Yeah.
So I was in your zone that you're in now. But my cousin persuaded me and I came out and I didn't really want to. And I sat in the restaurant. And I met my wife, and even like the 2 weeks, like I still had this sense of like, you know, like the 2 weeks after I met, where we saw each other a lot, I still had this sense of like, part of me was like, let's just stay in, we've got biscuits. But then the other part was like, no, we will not stay in. We met a girl that we like.
Yeah,
we've got to go out, and it's like, all right, then come on, let's do it. And, you know, so I sort of, good that I did sort of push myself. So it's very hard to know whether we should teach our kids to just say no to things they don't fancy doing, but maybe they should be more open and should, you know.
I mean, when you're young, you got to be open to everything. I read a great book called The Yes Man.
Yeah. Danny Baker. No.
Yeah.
No, it's not Danny Baker. Oh, he's.
Hey Siri, who wrote the book The Yes Man? Loser.
The Yes Man. Check it out.
Danny Wallace.
Danny Wallace. It was made into a film with starring Jim Carrey.
Yeah. I read that book when I was at university, 2021. And it was just as I was going through a breakup and I was living, and then I moved to Australia. Or was I already in Canada?
As I don't know.
Yeah. I was from Canada to Australia and I read, and it changed my life. I was just like, yep, I'm saying yes to obviously not everything, but to a lot of things.
Like, good thing someone didn't come up to you and say, would you like to put your head inside this threshing machine? Yeah. Yes. Damn.
Yeah.
Goodbye head.
But yeah, it was like a really, a bit of a life changing book where I was like, okay, cool. Like I'm not against, I still love new experiences. However, I feel like with the two jobs that I've had, the two main jobs, which is comedy and Apple, when I was at Apple, I would meet hundreds of people every month, different people in different countries for these training events. With comedy, I meet hundreds of people every week because, you know, they're after the show that we speak to them or whatever.
Right.
I feel like I've run out of people to meet. Like, I feel like I've met all the different types of people there are to meet. Like, I know, you know, when people often leave, you know, their hometown, and they go to a new hometown, they go, oh, that guy reminds me of this kid I was at school with, you know, the different personalities. Like, I feel like I've met all the people. Right. And especially with all the traveling that I've done as well, like, I feel like I've almost seen all the things. Like, nothing. Like, here's where I felt it changed as well. When I went to Japan last year in April, I was just like, yeah, great. Like, I feel like I've seen it.
Yeah.
We talked about it. I've seen the photos. You know, the flip cam,
you just felt like you were living a tourist experience that you'd lived in many places before.
And it was just like, I'm at a point right now where I'm like, I don't want to meet any new people. I don't want to go and see any new places.
Can I just say, you're going to meet a new person next month?
Yes.
Your daughter.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's the one person you haven't met yet.
Yeah. Who will change my life.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
I don't want to meet any new people. I don't want to see any new places. I've been in Paris for 10 years. Like, I wouldn't mind not living in Paris. But I don't want to be traveling anymore.
Good, man. Good. These are all, like, it wasn't that long ago that we were sitting in my other apartment.
Yeah.
And you were talking about how your friends were disappearing as if they're being turned into zombies by having children.
Yep.
And you were talking about this and he was that far away. Yeah, and I said to you, well, I think I'm ready now, meaning I don't think of it as being turned into a zombie. That's what I said to you. I think I'm ready now for
you.
It.
You guys weren't pregnant yet, right?
I don't think. Maybe.
Was she on the way?
No, I don't know. But anyway, regardless, you saying it being like being bitten by a zombie was not. I didn't take it negatively in that sense, but you were just talking about how it felt for you. So now here you are, and you're saying all the noises you're making are like, I'm ready. In fact, I can't wait.
Well, I know that I've been, I felt it straight away when Addy was like, I'm pregnant.
What a relief.
I felt the bite. The bite of the zombie being like, okay, cool. I've got 9 months until I switch to the other side and I find all my friends again.
Yeah.
And sure enough, in the last 9 months, we've seen all her friends more in the last 9 months than we've seen them in the last 9 years combined.
So you were at the gates of parenthood and here are all your friends waiting to welcome you in.
And I feel like I'm leaving. I mean, my close mates who are in England, I'm the first one to get married and have kids on their side, but I only see them 3 or 4 times a year anyway. So that's not going to change. So it literally feels like you're bitten and you're slowly turning into a zombie. And now I'm going to be a part of the zombie
crew. But now you realize it's not being a zombie, that it's something else. It's something more positive than that, I think.
I mean, it's positive zombies. Because you sleep about as much as zombies.
you will act like a zombie. You'll find yourself walking around.
You've got bloodshot eyes.
Yeah.
You don't know what's happening anymore.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, look, talking of children and stuff, I've got to go and pick up the little one from daycare.
Nice.
I speak on behalf of my listeners at this point by saying congratulations. I know that's about nine. Yeah. I'm 9 months late, but
I didn't announce it really to anyone. Announced it. You know, it's one of those things that because I'm a public figure, so to speak, you know, I haven't. There's no photos of all our friends have got photos of their wives with the bump and everything. We haven't even taken a photo of Addy with the bump. I think we're gonna take one.
Yeah.
For us.
Yeah.
And a video of the belly moving, because that's kind of freaky.
Yeah, do private stuff. Like, have your own photo album and do all that stuff. It doesn't all have to go on Instagram.
I'm going to post, so LEP listeners, you are the first to know this. So when you see the photo, you'll be like, oh, that's the photo that he was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm going to, when it happens, I'm just going to have a photo of, a hand.
Yeah.
In the middle of the just the hand being like hello from a new tailor or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like watch out, there's a new tailor in town.
Yeah.
Something fun like that. Yeah, and because no one on my social, no one knows that I'm having a kid except for you now. You're the first audience people that aren't, you know, I've never mentioned it on my social media.
No, it's the Lepsters are always the ones who get first disclosure.
Yeah, and you were there at the beginning, Lepsters. Yeah. You were the first people to hear my voice.
Yeah.
You know, before everything kicked off.
We heard about the concept of Stereo Trip first, I think. We heard about the concept potentially of Franglais.
Of
all of this stuff.
When I came back from Edinburgh.
Yeah.
That was when the concept of Franglais.
Even Taylor's Top Tips was birthed on this podcast.
On this podcast, mate.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been you guys are the true Taylor fans. So and if you don't follow me, then do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so watch out for Paul's Instagram, because at some point he'll post a little picture of the hand or something.
End of June, beginning of July.
All right. All right. Well, good.
Yeah, we didn't do what we were going to do, but
But that's fine.
I don't even remember we were going to listen to accents.
We were going to check out some videos and check out some accents and stuff. But I think we had an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thanks for that.
Yeah. Do you want to say goodbye to the people of the world?
Yeah. Thanks for listening, Lepsters. Whether you're Lepsters or ninjas, well, probably the next time I speak to you will be when I have a child. So I can't wait for you to be like, so Paul, how do you feel? How's it going? How are you as a new dad? So I'll probably have lots of stories to tell.
Let's hope so.
So see you soon. Thanks for listening.
Okay, cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So there you go. That was my chat with Paul. Congrats again to Paul and his wife, Addy. Best of luck for the birth. We're all looking forward to meeting the new Taylor when she arrives. You may have heard us mention a book there briefly. Paul talked about this book, Yes Man, by Danny Wallace, which is a great, interesting and funny book written in modern plain English. Now, I know that you, my listeners, are always interested in finding new books in English to read. This one was very popular when it came out, and I think it's not too difficult to read and should be full of the right kind of English, everyday English in a plain and modern style. So I recommend it. If you're looking for a book to read, and it's non-fiction, it's all about a guy's life and how he decided that he needed to be more positive. And so he made a decision. He said, I'm going to just say yes to anything. Whatever people ask me, I'm going to say yes to it. How did that change his life? Well, it's all sort of explained in the book, Yes Man by Danny Wallace. And it was made into a film starring Jim Carrey. I think the book is better than the film, as is often the case. So there you go. Yes Man by Danny Wallace, if you're interested. There is an audiobook version, which you might want to listen to. It's available on Audible. And remember that I've got a kind of a sponsorship deal with Audible. So every now and then I recommend audiobooks for my listeners. And they're offering a deal to you. If you go through my URL, which is audibletrial.com/teacherluke, bit complex, Audible, AUDIBLE, trial, TRIAL, .com/teacherluke. Go there, and then you can start a 30-day free trial with Audible, and that includes a free audiobook of your choice. And they've got hundreds of thousands of audiobooks. So you could search for Yes Man, Danny Wallace, and you might be able to find it. The way it works is you get the Audible app on your phone, you buy your audiobooks through the Audible website, and then you link it to the app with the same account, and then you can download the audiobook in your phone and then listen to it when you're out and about. It's great. So you could check out Yes Man by Danny Wallace. Just go to audibletrial.com/teacherluke if you fancy it. But that's almost it for this episode. So just a bit of sort of podcast news, and I'm going to do a song as well at the end of this one, because I've got a song which I've been trying to play recently, and I think it's sort of appropriate for the topic we've been talking about. So anyway, before I do the song, just a bit of admin info. So I've got two more free episodes to publish on the podcast before things go a bit quiet while I work on premium content, all right? This is episode 597 we're listening to. So I've got episode 598 and 599 to publish. Then things are going to go quiet for the free podcast, and I'm going to be working on premium content, okay? So those next two episodes, 598 and 599, those two episodes are also conversations with guests. Earlier this week, I spoke to Oliver G, the Australian journalist, and he told me lots of interesting stories about things like the recent fire at the Notre Dame Cathedral, meeting some famous people while working as a journalist, and also his experiences of learning Swedish and French. It was a great conversation. I think you're really going to enjoy it. That's coming soon. So that's recorded. I haven't sort of produced the episode yet, but that's recorded. I've got that in the bag. And I think you're really going to like that conversation. It's full of interesting stories and stuff. The other conversation hasn't been recorded yet, but it's going to be with my dad. That's the plan. We're going to talk on Monday next week, and the idea is to somehow describe the recent situation in British politics and some other things, like a recent conference that my dad moderated about climate change. And hopefully we'll have time to talk a bit more about football, because my dad follows UK football very closely. So that's going to be the latest Rick Thompson report. That one isn't recorded yet. So, I mean, hopefully nothing's going to sort of... Hopefully, if all goes according to plan, we will record that on Monday. And I'll do the recording next week, and I'll publish it quickly afterwards. So that's probably going to be the next one, as long as nothing goes wrong. That should be recorded and published early next week. And then the Oliver G episode should go up after that. And then things will go quiet for a while, and there will be no free episodes, probably for a couple of weeks or a few weeks. But I will be working hard on new premium content, which should arrive steadily during that period, because I've got to upload my premium content for May and also for June. So I'm going to just get my head down and focus on premium stuff for those few weeks, okay? Sign up to LEP Premium at teacherluke.co.uk/premium. Don't forget also that Paul's one-hour stand-up show is now available on YouTube, filmed in front of a live audience, on stage. In fact, I'm pretty sure that they filmed the show that I performed at. So when Paul used to do his one-man show, he'd ask other comedians like, you know, me and Sarah and Amber and stuff, we'd open the show and do a few minutes of comedy beforehand. I think I was at the one that was filmed. You don't see me. There's no evidence of me being there, but I was there. So anyway, search YouTube for Paul Taylor Franglais, F-R-A-N-G-L-A-I-S, Franglais. That's the name of the show. The bits which are in French have English subtitles, by the way. It's about 50% English and 50% French, but the French bits have got English subtitles written by Paul. So watch the show. It's very funny. It's great. And also you can check out Paul's excellent French skills. It's very impressive. Just one more thing before we go to the song. Episode 600, the YouTube live stream. I've chosen a date and a time for the live stream, the YouTube live stream for episode 600. I hope you can join me. It's going to be Friday, the 7th of June at 3 p.m. 3 p.m.? How do you say that, Luke? I'm talking to myself. This is strange. It's going to be Friday, the 7th of June at 3 p.m. Paris time. That's Central European time. 3 p.m. Paris time, Friday, the 7th of June. So, I'm not sure where you are when you listen to this, but 3 p.m. Paris time is 6 a.m. on the west coast of the USA. It's 9 a.m. in New York on the Friday. It's 8 a.m. in Mexico City on Friday the 7th. 10 a.m. in Rio in Brazil, 2 p.m. in London, 4 p.m. in Moscow, 4 p.m. in Ankara, Turkey, 6:30 p.m. in New Delhi in India, 9 p.m. in Shanghai, 10 p.m. in Tokyo, 11 p.m. in Sydney, and then 1 a.m. On the Saturday morning in Auckland, New Zealand. All right. So anyway, the live stream, 3 p.m. Central European time on the 7th of June. Okay. Now, if that's not the perfect time for you, then I am sorry. There's not much I can do about that, I'm afraid. Whatever time I do it, there will be some people in the world who won't be able to attend. So that's just the way it is. Also, 3 p.m. Friday, this is just when I'm free. So that's really the only time I could do it. I'll be announcing this again on the podcast properly, but here it is, 3 p.m. Paris time, Friday the 7th of June. I'll also create a YouTube link for the live stream, which I'll share on my website and on social media. So yeah, that's how you'll be able to access the live stream, through the link. I think probably on my YouTube channel, you'll see the thumbnail for the live stream as well. So there you go. Cool. Nice one. That's going to happen. It's good to have chosen a date. Okay, I'm going to finish the episode with a song, and the song is one that I've been thinking of. It's a lovely song. I absolutely love this song, mainly because of the lyrics, but it's a nice tune as well. The lyrics mean things to me in ways that I can't really explain. I can't really put it into words how these lyrics mean things to me. You know the way it is with song lyrics. Sometimes it expresses a feeling. You can't really explain it, and so I'm not going to try and explain it. But the song is called I Am a Child, and it's by another one by Neil Young. I just like playing Neil Young songs because they're normally not too complicated. And so this is me playing I Am a Child on with sketchy guitar in the background. I Am a Child. So it's all about a child and parent relationship. And one of the things I like about the lyrics is the way that a lot of the lines in the song, a lot of the lyrics could refer to the child or could refer to the adult. It's interesting in that way. So there are lines like, I gave to you, now you give to me. So in a sense, like, it could be the parent saying that, like, I gave to you, meaning I gave you life, and now you give to me, in the sense that you're kind of giving back by just the love that you bring to me, and it's the joy that you've brought to me. Or it could be the child saying that to the parents, like, I give to you, meaning I've given you my joy and all the wonderful things that I've brought to you, and now it's time for you to give to me. You have to teach me and give me information and stuff like that. I'm not going to explain the lyrics anymore. You can find the lyrics links on the page for this episode, and but as you listen to the song, you can just consider what the lyrics mean to you. And do you think it's the child that's speaking, or is it the parent that's speaking in each line of the song? And what does the chorus mean? The sky is blue and so is the sea. But what is the colour when black is burned? Mysterious. But it's a lovely song and I hope you like it. If you don't like me singing, then this is the time for you to stop. But if you're happy to listen to me sing, then listen on and you'll hear the song and then the jingle at the end. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy my version of I Am a Child by Neil Young. Child, I'll last a while. You can't conceive of the pleasure in my smile. You hold my hand, rough up my hair. It's lots of fun to have you there. I'll give to you, now you give to me. I'd like to know what you've learned. The sky is blue and so is the sea. What is the color when black is burnt? What
What is the color? You lay me down again. You make the rules. You say what's fair. It's lots of fun to have you there. I give to you, now you give to me. I'd like to know what you've learned. The sky is blue, and so is the sea. What is the color when black is burned? What is the color? Last a while, you can conceive of the pleasure in my smile.
Thank you for listening. Speak to you again soon. Goodbye. Bye. 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 Bye.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.